This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Front Row on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Sharmila Ganesan. In this age of constant image making and instant shareability, how do we draw the line between the real and the image? Artist Ivan Lam examines this idea in his exhibition Faux, where oil paintings, still life and WhatsApp images come together in some very interesting ways. The show is on at Wailing Contemporary until the 2nd of April. Ivan is here with me today. Thank you for joining me, Ivan. I'm actually curious about how the idea for this exhibition started in the first place, because it's kind of this interesting combination of still life, what we traditionally think of as still life, yeah, but sort of reimagined for the modern age almost.
Correct, yes, yes, it is. I think it started, I think, five years back when my mom was doing flower arrangement for a church every Sunday, right? And then my sis would capture a picture, a really low-res camera phone picture, and send it to the rest of the group. And we were ooh and ah, and it was a form of encouragement for her to do more, because she was really inferior about, you know, putting her piece on the altar and stuff. So that started, and I have this collection of pictures in my phone that I thought one day I'll do something about it. So the opportunity never came.
And these were pictures of the flower arrangement.
Of the flower itself. So I have no say how the flowers are arranged. My sister one that took the picture. So it's really deadpan, you know, not composed. It was just the way it is. So finally, I decided to do something about it. It's like an invisible collaboration with your mother, sort of.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't tell it to her till much later. I think that did a number to her. When you start telling her that you're working on a project, she was very conscious about making the flowers now, knowing that, not knowing that when it's going to become a painting or an artwork. So that was the premise. That was the vehicle, the drive of the series of work.
Basically, these are flower arrangements that your mom makes for church, is
yes,
it?
Yes.
Right. So these were pictures that you've been taking, of the arrangements.
Correct.
What sparked the idea of linking that to this? I mean, still life is this grand tradition in Western art.
Yes.
How did that happen?
Yeah, because I always wanted to get, I haven't been painting for the longest time. I was into performance and looking at different way of making art. So to jump back into the realm of painting, and what more to connect to this whole 500 years tradition, the Renaissance, and also for the first time using oil that I haven't used since I graduated from college, right? And of course, oil painting, the whole currency, the whole, you know, this is traditional. And it was like swimming in the deep end of the pool, I think. So to jump right back then, it was good.
Could you describe for the listeners who may not have seen the works yet, you know, just visually, what will they be seeing?
Okay, it's a rectangle landscape. So one half of it is divided equally. On the left side, you would see the flowers arrangement, the still life. On the right side, it's a marble. So both of them, the whole dichotomy of that, it's very interesting and contrasting at the same time. So both of them are set in a rectangle format.
And both are oil paintings.
Mm. The other side, I would leave in a mystery. When people view it, right, the people that have seen it, or even the people that have seen it not in the gallery setting, they have a lot of questions as to how do I make it? Is it real? Did I paint it? Did I print it? And how did I get it onto the other side? So I think that sparked the whole title of the work, Faux, which is in French for fake, right? So that gives it a bit more. But the investigation, it's still ongoing. So I'm not going to give it too much. I think I want to reward people that actually make it to the show. Yeah.
And why Faux? Why was that the overarching theme?
I think first when I came across the word, right, I didn't know how to pronounce it properly. I was just calling it Fox. So that was when I was much younger. And getting known, and it's such a cool word you always wanted to use in the sentence, but you never, you know, it's always in a fashion sense, you know, faux-pas and all that stuff. But how do you use it in the work? And then when I was looking at the definition of work, it means imitation. They even use the word fake or fakery, right? So I think imitation is a really good word, that you imitate something that's real. And so that digs back into an artist, right? You are just a pale imitation of what nature gives, right? We are just trying to be closer, but we'll never get to the real thing. So that investigation has been constantly going on. Who's the authorship of this work? And I was questioning myself, right? I didn't arrange the flowers. I didn't take the pictures.
Mm.
So I'm just another cog in the machine. So that surrendering of ego, which is not easy because every artist, every creator would want to have full control over their work and how they present it. But this one, I gave up half the control, one side of it. So the whole authorship, the whole who's the creator, who's the creation. So that is, I think that's interesting for me.
And it's also this, it does also engage with ideas of how we consume images now in the modern age, right?
Yes.
When we receive an image of something,
mm.
are we actually seeing the thing as it is, or are we seeing a version of it, an mm-hmm. imitation of it, right? Because
yep.
That's what came to mind when I heard about the concept behind your show.
Yeah, yeah.
Was that something you were thinking about as well?
Yeah, I think the lineage about production and reproduction of prints, right? What is and what is not anymore? And in this modern age, in this age of Instagram, the World Wide Web, it has become even more so. You know, it's like you have a filter, you're taking a picture of a picture and then you're sending out and then they will get forwarded, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then how we receive them, I think these days we never really pay attention that much anymore. It's just like a swipe or a delete or we forward it, right? But to actually hold that image
mm.
on my phone and then spend months doing it, I think I want to take that back, that control over that. If it's this image that I want to spend my time, I want to really investigate what's the image about and what's the weight it's carrying. So to slow down the speed of things that comes to us these days, I think.
Sort of the to slow down the time
yes.
we spend with the image as well, right?
Yes.
And is there a deeper layer in it for you? Because this is made by not the picture, but the arrangement is by your mom.
Yeah.
So in some ways, there's also that layer, right? There's a connection, a larger sense of it's not just a picture.
Mm-hmm. I think it flit and flat between the two, right? Between what's personal and what you made personal. And then when you get back to the public realm, it becomes non-personal again. So when you have something that's precious, right, when you have a relationship, because I never had a warm or, you know, that tight connection with my mom. So for the first time working with her indirectly, that created a sort of like a bonding, I think, that I could relate somewhat, that we met halfway.
Mm-hmm.
So that's very personal. So when I got that image from my sis, and I was working in it, it could get quite emotional because flowers itself is very much of a symbol about you know, impermanence. And then here you are trying to make it permanent again. I think there's so many layers and there's so many negotiation of these boundaries. And I think it's where you want to come in, where you want to engage in that conversation. I think it's potent, I think.
I also find it very interesting that actually these were pictures that your sister took
yeah.
and then sent to you. So there are these like steps of mediation
yes.
and steps of almost removal and then
correct.
Reacquaintance.
That's right.
At what point did these different things start becoming clear to you?
I wish I could tell you. Oh, I planned everything now. You know, it was so clear, but it wasn't the way. I had these images for 5 years, right? And this is on my phone, from phone to phone. And when I had just a notion that it could become something else, I write that notion a bit more. It's getting it and then losing it,
mm-hmm.
and then getting it and then losing it. And the whole point of losing it, for you to find it back again, I think that search of energy, it's constantly in there. So obviously you got to make the decision. You got to like, okay, we happen to have a body of work but you second guess your decision at the same time. You say, like, oh, how many do you take? Because there's tons of images. And when do you end the work? So you only can surrender your ego so much. You can only surrender yourself so much before the whole, okay, I'm the production manager now, I'm the sweeper of the factory,
mm.
you know, the whole thing. You're playing all these roles, you're picking all these hats. I think it has been good, I think, this whole series, you know, to lose control and then take control back.
How long did the actual creating of the work, how long did that process take?
Took about 18 months, I think.
Mm-hmm.
All in all. So average out of painting would take two months to make.
But you mentioned that actually the photos had been sort of sitting in your phone for quite a bit
longer. Longest time, yes.
I'm curious whether once you told your mom that it's now going to make up your work, did she change the kinds of arrangements she made?
I think everyone changed. I think my sister changed. My sister was...
started taking better photos.
Yes, telling me, you know, this is how you should do it. You know, this is how I compose it. So the artist in them suddenly was over. You know, they are taking charge. They are telling me, you should do this one. You should arrange it this way, right? That's when I know that that ended. That was the point, okay, this point forward, these images are not good anymore. Because they are deliberate. And now it's no longer a fun project. Now it's become conscious now. Now it's become something else. So that's a good thing that I know that, you know, suddenly things are changing. Mm. What happened to the flowers? You know, why is mom deliberately doing it this way or that way?
So are there works in the series that are both pre them knowing and post them knowing?
Oh, no. I think it's all pre. There's no post. Because it just looks manipulated.
It's kind of like that difference between seeing someone's photo because they just took it and then someone's photo because they're an Instagram influencer,
correct,
right?
Yeah. They're posing for it, yeah.
Well, we do need to take a break. And when we come back, we'll hear more about Ivan Lam's exhibition called Faux, which is on at Wailing Contemporary until the 2nd of April. You're listening to Front Row on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. This is Front Row on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Sharmila Ganesan. I'm speaking to Ivan Lam, whose exhibition called Faux brings together some very interesting elements. WhatsApp images of flower arrangements by the artist's mother, oil painting, and slabs of marble, among other things. So, Ivan, I find this very interesting, this juxtaposition of the marble against the flowers.
Yeah. I think the marble came about when I was in Rome. I think there was just so much of this marble everywhere and the whole thing about it being so permanent. And we have all these Renaissance artists that carved from the marble and made something out of it. And it's just amazing. So, but I find it the pure marble itself without being carved, just as it is, it's already a work of art. You see abstraction, you see abstract expressionism, you see all this movement, people trying to imitate all that. And here we are, you know, made higher power, you know, we've been there for millions of years and it took millions of years to create a piece of marble. And I didn't do anything more, I just want to present it this way, permanency versus, you know, the whole juxtaposition, the whole dichotomy between flowers fleeting and this is so permanent.
Mm.
And then putting it together and then working on that side also is another surrendering of ego, because it was never good. I didn't know, so I was visiting marble factory, talking to the workers, getting them to help me. So I was just another cog in the machine again, so I'm like another worker and they are not artists, so that's another bonding on the other side of the world. And visiting them every other day and spending hours with them away from the studio, so that's a good take also, I think, from both sides about not being your boss in your own company.
And also about labor in many ways, right? Mm-hmm. Because this work is not just your labor, it's your mom's labor.
Yes.
And then now that you've told me about the marble workers, there's their labor that kind of infuses the work as well.
Yep.
Tell me a little bit about this idea of labor when it comes to this particular collection.
I think it's always, for me, being in this industry for like almost 2 decades now, right? It's always the whole reinvention of being a novice, being a student, and the hunger to reinvent, to start again, not to get caught up in the rut, right? So therefore, the collaboration is a very positive word, that you work with people that are not directly related to you, or sometimes they are directly opposite of what you do. And that part forces you to change, forces you to do things that you're not in your comfort zone anymore. I think getting people involved is so important now that I don't see going forward, right, that you labor in your own studio at your own rate and not communicate, not reaching out, I'm not getting help.
Mm.
And to think that you can do it all by yourself, right, without anybody's help, that is just wrong. I mean, that's just a whole ego trip, right, that needs to be stopped. So I, for the beginning of the time, when I involve people, really get them involved to see that, oh, this could go somewhere, this could be art. You know, it's like meeting them heart vision and bridging the gap between, you know, what is art and what's not, right? And that boundary is always blurred. I think it's important. To bridge that gap, I think.
And so as the creator of this work, do you view these other people, in this case, you know, your mom perhaps, do you view them as collaborators? How do you, what is your relationship to them?
I think it's very self-effacing, I think, for me. That I didn't want to be the center of the universe, the maker, the creator. And every time I try to erase the signature that I put on that, oh, this could be done by somebody else. And then that's like the greatest compliment ever that anyone can give me. I just didn't want to get locked into a particular style or movement that you're forever known. When you keep changing, when you keep doing something else, I think you're forever free to explore before you get caught into the rut. And people do it all the time. So we're having all these people, they're collaborators, they are my makers. Without them, none of this possible. I think it's just that they didn't put it together the way I see fit. I think that's about it. They are nothing short of amazing in their contribution to the world, I think.
I mean, it's interesting that you should say that because, yes, actually, when you look at your body of work as a whole, it can almost feel like your, you know, each thing you do is almost completely unrelated to the previous work. If I didn't know they were your work, I would think, oh, whose work is this? I mean, you know, so how do you view this particular collection as a, you know, in terms of your larger body of work, what are the connections? What are the ways in which you've deviated from what you would normally do?
I think the essence, I think, the essence people that have seen it now, the essence is that the dichotomy, the investigation, and I think it's not so much about stylistic now. I think it's important that people would be expecting the unexpected. It's like, whoa, what are you doing? You're doing still life now. I say, yeah, why not? You know, that whole why not, what if, that takes place all the time. And you question and you question again. I think what they can glean or people looked at were people that have followed through, right? There's something that's still there, so inherently still me. It's just that the package that it comes in, the style has changed. What else? What's the same? What's the different? The different is constantly pushing the boundaries regardless of what turned up. I think a lot. I think the reliance on the hands, like you say, the skilled labor, it's overrated now. I want to develop a bit more on the thinking, the research, the collaboration aspect to work.
And are there themes or ideas that you see yourself repeating in your works?
No, I think I want to move on. I think I want to move on from topic to topic and topic that are relevant, topic that are a reflection of the times that that we live in. Like we talk about Instagram, we talk about how image reproduction, which is current, I think those things, those currency are still floating around. I think people, when people look at it, it's just how do you package, how do you deliver that to your audience? They might not get it now because it's so different from what you have done before. But given time, right, it will sit. It will sit better. It will sit well. So work should be able to last through this upheaval of things are moving at such a hyper rate, getting so slow down. Investigate the layers if you want, and then slowly peel back and enjoy what you discover. Right?
And what have you discovered with this work? I mean, it's one thing to work through the process. Once it all came together at the end, was there sort of an aha moment, or was there something that you sort of realized that you didn't see before?
I think the fear, I didn't know. I thought, you know, having done, this is my 10th show with Whaling Gallery, and to look back, right, and then to look forward, I think it's a constant fear that you repeat yourself, and I'm glad I didn't. So that was the aha moment. It's like, okay, Ivan, when are you ever going to fall down the rut? When are you going to repeat yourself? So subconsciously, I always tell her, right, if I'm repeating myself, I tell Waylon, then you get a club and then club me to death before I start doing it. So this constant fear that you want to run away from yourself. You want to constantly be somebody else, I think.
It's interesting that you're talking about repeating yourself in the context of an exhibition that is about making copies.
Yeah.
But on that theme, actually, what is it like to be an artist, a contemporary artist, that lives in this age where images are so ubiquitous, right? Like, yes, images are all around us, and you know, there are copies and versions. How does that change the way you work as an artist or affect the way you think about art?
I think it should. I think back in the days, right, when you want to see a painting, all you can have is, you know, you got to go to a bookstore, you got to go to a library, right?
Mm.
Either you browse or you buy, right? That's like the closest, or you take a flight, that's it. There's not many avenues for an artist or a student artist to get to the source. But nowadays, you don't even have to leave the comfort of your room, and you could be in some museum, you know, in another part of the world. I think that tool, it's a power that is in our hands, and how you harness the power, how you divert those power, how do you make it your own, I think it's so important. And as an artist, right, you have to react and respond at the same time. Not only react, you have to respond to the change that's happening around you. For instance, we talk about, you know, slowing down the time, take the time to smell the roses, drink the coffee a bit more. I think that's so important, more so now. There's always, I see it as a pendulum swing. The more we swing to things being mass produced, and then the other part is people would produce something that's so bespoke just for you. Right? The way the things move so fast, there's another counter force that makes to make things slow. So I think it's constantly swinging. Hardly we were at rest at a very balanced spot, but not for long. So as an artist, right, it really depends on where you swing the pendulum, right?
Mm.
And constantly having that motion and the energy to do so.
And so one of the things that I find quite interesting for a series that sort of grapples with these ideas of modern versus traditional, the titles of your work are almost they feel very quaint.
Yeah,
you know,
that's a story, right? Yeah, right,
things like Always Waiting, Be Thankful, Just For You. Where did those come from?
Came from my mom.
Oh, your mom named the paintings. Oh.
When it was all done in the studio, right, I invited her over, and she hadn't come to the studio, she hadn't seen. So she was like, whoa, she was really taken aback that her flower has become another art form. And I tasked her, like, Mom, take your time, right, to come up with it, because you are the one that made it, right? Mm-hmm. So why don't you just complete the circle and give them titles? And for me to surrender that trust, Mom, you know, it's all you now. The work is all done. 18 years, you know, 18 months of work, it's all in your hands. And she took it very seriously. You know, she said she had a notepad because there's only 8, 9 of them, right? After spending like hours there, she couldn't come up with a single one. She said, I got to set this true, you know. I got to really take this back home and take my time and give you the title that you need. A week passed, nothing happened. I was like, what's going on? I need a title. 10 days pass, right? And finally, I got this same post-it note together. And it's all there. And when I read the title, I was like, oh, this is so you, Mom. This is not in a million years, right? I would title those work, you know. Because when it comes to titling, it's very weird. You want to be smart. You want to elude the viewer into something that they can look at the title, right? But my mom did such a great job that it's so her.
Yeah, they're very mom-like titles.
Yeah, they're very mom-like, you know.
But there's a sincerity and a lack of pretension to them. Yeah,
and it pairs to the painting really well. You know, all those weird things that you never expect. Something and you got unexpected in the end of it. So it was quite sweet. I think it turned out well. And I'm glad I asked my mom, because I would be giving some, you know, jargon and try to jazz it up, which, you know, normally what people do. And I'm glad it was heartfelt, like you say, it was from the heart pouring it out, and it was what it is.
Mm. And what do you hope that people who come to the exhibition take away from seeing the works?
I know, make your own conclusion, right? I think the response I'm getting so far from the people that attended, the people that asked questions, is how do you, is it real? Is it not? So that was the whole thing that I want people to have that takeaway. Go and have a look at it. Make your own conclusion. I'm not going to give you the answer. Yeah, I think it was great that actually people wanted to touch the painting. People want to hold the painting and see how heavy those marbles are. People want to ask questions, right? So that is the most interactive work that I ever had and never thought about it.
Well, thank you very much, Ivan, for joining me today.
Yeah, appreciate it.
I've been speaking to artist Ivan Lam, whose exhibition called Pho is on at Wailing Contemporary until the 2nd of April. For more information, visit wailing-gallery.com. If you missed any part of this interview or any previous Front Row segments, you can download the podcasts on bfm.my, on our app, or on Spotify. You've been listening to Front Row and The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.